Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
It's a town full of losers and I'm pulling out here to win, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. The 2028 Euros are heading this way and Eden Hazard's retired. It's Wednesday, 11th of October. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Pete Donaldson.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And Anisha Nataraja.
Hi, everybody. It's a wonderful Wednesday here on the Football Ramble. Bit of Bruce Springsteen to start the show. Jim, don't pretend you didn't know.
I didn't. But
see,
it's nice
he's still going. Thanks to Nick for emailing us today's intro line. You can choose the intro line for next Wednesday show. Just shine up. Shine up.
Shine
and
up.
Then sign up.
Shine up, straighten up and fly right for crying out loud.
The Football Ramble patron using the link in the show description.
Marcus, I can't get the Paul Russell song Boothang out of my head.
Yes.
And it's been in there for 3 days. And
oh,
I was very unwell yesterday.
That.
And I could not sleep. And all I could hear is that fucking song going round my head with that riff from Best of My Love. I just cannot.
I don't know the song.
Stop.
I don't know the artist.
As soon as you hear it, it will never get out of your head.
At times, Peter, I feel like I don't know you.
I think you just have to listen to it, surely. Purge it.
Yeah. They say that when you kind of think about a song too much, it's because you haven't listened to it enough.
Right.
Because it's like an unresolved puzzle.
Ah, okay.
Huh. See, I get this about twice a year with thong song, as we know.
But so you just wear a lot of thongs.
Exactly. That's how you go through it.
Every time Jim puts them on. And you put one pair on for about 6 months, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So, yeah, it all makes
sense. Getting dirty? There's no fabric.
It makes sense in the end. What's getting dirty? Jim's parties. Like to refute that.
Jim's party is getting dirtier.
Talking of dirty parties, we're hosting the Euros. Come on. It's official.
Yes.
The UK and Ireland 2028, baby.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to the international press getting the whole UK and Ireland thing all mixed up.
Yes.
And upsetting a whole lot of people.
Order your flares now. Stick them up your asses.
I'm starting to feel like my entire life.
Jim, that was a nice callback, wasn't it? To the flare up the bottom.
I don't think it was even a callback. It was simply a reference and it was appreciated.
It was a call to arms.
He's probably got a better job than us now.
Call to bums.
Yeah. You were going to say something perhaps sensible.
Well, I don't know that it is going to be that sensible, but I'm just starting to feel like my entire life might just be Euro 96 nostalgia. I think it's just never going to stop, because we're going to have waves and waves of it now.
Now, we've moved on.
We've got 5 years.
We've moved on from Euro 96 now. I'm quite
I bet
happy.
We haven't.
Yeah,
we haven't.
I bet you...
We're doing the Beckham documentary in a bit. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
We'll have year 2000 nostalgia, where we were all scumbags, it seems.
Can we get one of those gigs like those comedians you never really seem to see on stage, who are always talking heads in those kind of nostalgia pieces?
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, Premier League, yes. Pete Donaldson.
Yeah.
Channel 5, thank you.
Yeah, we are, you see.
£200.
£200.
An hour or a flat fee?
Flat fee. Didn't get repeats.
How many times have we got to tell you?
I know.
When they say £200, it's not a flat fee. Every hour you're in there.
It's happening. The UK and Ireland will host the Euros in 2020. Of course, none of the host nations will be given automatic qualification. That is a blow for some of four of the five countries in that equation.
Is it kind of like...
Yeah, that's a dig, Fish.
No, but it's true, isn't it? And it probably because England pulled rank and said, yeah, we don't actually... You know what? We don't want to... just have a freebie. We want to work for
Well, it's fine.
And then they looked around at the other nations and went, that's what we're going to do. And the Scots immediately went, well, we'll do that as well then. And then everyone, oh no.
It's all a bit, do you remember when there was the CEO of the identity theft company in America, and he was so confident of his own product, he put his social security number on loads of billboards around America.
Silly.
And he instantly, no, different guy. But he instantly got his, got identity theft thieved like 13 times. And like, it's just a bad idea.
Maybe that's what he wanted.
I just think we're going to be hoisted by our own.
Yeah,
well, you think we're not going to qualify.
We're
due and not qualifying,
yeah,
aren't we?
Exactly.
It's been a while.
Yeah,
and it turns out Sean Dyche's England don't make it to 2028. Well, yeah, so England, they rejected the chance for automatic qualification, of course. However, it is said that UEFA will keep two spots open in reserve to any who fail to qualify.
That's embarrassing.
Now, as you know...
What does that mean?
Two doesn't go around five when it comes to places, does it, Jim? So if more than two teams fail to qualify within the UK and Irish teams, then the teams with the best records in the campaign will make it.
It's not really a backup spot. There's not a random backup spot, is it? It's just literally...
Taking two spots off of someone else.
Yeah. So one thing that I will look forward to is Ireland, Northern Ireland, Wales and Scotland getting behind England in that qualification, because that will help them out if England qualify, of course.
Yeah.
And I've already disrespected all the other nations. Jim, can you be Tony Blair in this equation?
I mean, yeah, it's all going to be great. They're all going to qualify on merit.
Uh-huh. And we're all going to win the tournament.
We
are. Shared five ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Good.
What do you think about the split of the stadiums? Because
it's inevitable.
I'm going to put this out there.
Go on.
I don't think Wembley should have the final.
After it was naughty last time.
Yeah, although Marcus, agree. You were at the final and you claim nothing happened. Don't you? You repeatedly say it was all made up nonsense.
I was also
a load of woke nonsense.
I was also at the final and told by people who were affected by it that something did happen.
Yeah, so are you basically saying because Wembley misbehaved last
time? No, I just think, just move it around.
Yeah,
Hampden, great.
In terms of attendance, though, obviously Wembley is the biggest.
There's a strong argument for it. You want the most people possible to see the final.
And also...
And they're letting loads for free anyway. So
exactly, yeah.
I mean, and also, you know, learn from your mistakes. And Wembley has very much said, yes, we've learned from our mistakes.
Aren't they going to spend like £100 billion quid on security?
Reinforcing it, yeah.
We've put a lock on each door.
We've got to lock the round of applause.
But it's basically impossible, isn't it? Because of the way they've built up the area around Wembley Stadium.
Right.
So, because they have those flats there that people live in,
right?
Yeah, you can't
stop people from.
Yeah,
other Champions League games. I mean, I appreciate there was it was an absolute shit show when Liverpool played Real Madrid in that final in France, in the Stade de France. But you were meant to have in other stadiums. They have a sort of what they call like a sort of a defensive ring around the stadiums, because a lot of stadiums are outside of a city whereas Wembley was quite congested. But you
couldn't do that in Cardiff. You kind of central, isn't it?
Right, exactly. Well, you couldn't do it in St James's Park either, which is one of the host stadiums.
I don't think
that's
going to be hosting the final.
No, I don't think so either. But they
Old Trafford. That's in a good nick now, isn't it?
It's not one of the
genuinely
enough,
maybe they get some really government embarrassing funding. For United that it's not in the final 10, surely.
Well, yeah. I don't. I mean, how hard did they go for it? I mean,
well, it's probably actually quite a good thing because that's one thing. Did they really pitch for it? But also, like,
the Etihad is
just a bit of a wake up call.
Yeah, also, the reasons they've given, to be fair to them, are that they can't guarantee that it will be available because redevelopment work is scheduled.
But. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, apart from me looked at it and thought, well, blimey, you know, some of these stadiums aren't complete. You know, the Everton's new stadium, for example. You obviously have the one in Northern Ireland, Casement Park, and a lot of controversy around that, and I'd encourage anybody to do their reading on it. But elsewhere, you know, you look at one or two, and you think some of the great stadiums that are with seeped in history that we have in this country, and you think, actually, okay, St James's Park's there, obviously, well, Wembley's still a new stadium, I suppose, but the Tottenham Stadium's a new one, Etihad's sort of fairly new. Some might argue that, well, come on, there's been enough sort of recent history, you could argue there.
Yeah. But there isn't, isn't it? Which Anfield's is a shame. It's something to do with the pitch dimensions, I think.
Yeah, perhaps they didn't want it. I don't, you know, I mean, there's all these kind of things. But England have six of the stadiums involved in the Euros, of course, and then you have one in each of the other countries, in Dublin, Belfast, in Cardiff, and in Glasgow. Hampden's always going to get the nod. I mean, the only other country you would say perhaps could host more than one game would be in Scotland, you know, where Ibrox or Celtic Park could be used. That is in the same city, and they tend not to like that. Because I was, I suppose, because I mean, you've got two in not just London, in the North London area, you know, with Spurs and Wembley.
Well, three if you count Wembley. Oh, sorry, I thought you included the Emirates as a potential.
But I know,
thought you were talking on a wider sense. About the one that obviously should have been chosen.
I know this is.
Sincil Bank was a bit of a swerve, I thought.
Yeah. I know this is an unwise thing to do, Jim, nowadays, but I am just sticking to the facts here, okay? And what is going to actually happen. But so I think that's probably it. But we know the 10, and I honestly think this country in Ireland, it's a great, you know, it's small, you can get around. I mean, we don't
know about that.
Well, HS2 will be finished by then, yeah, won't it?
Hopefully, you'll be able to get around.
So that'll get you to Villa Park.
Yeah, if you're playing at Wembley and at Villa Park, you won't believe how quickly you'll be.
Being in Japan,
you'll be able to watch the first half of one game at Wembley, second half at Villa Park. Jobs are good. But I'm very pleased to see that this is going to be the case. Harry Kane's already said that he's got unfinished business and he wants to be still around playing, have the kind of longevity that Messi and Ronaldo have had in their careers, and clean up when it comes to Euro 2028, Jim.
Yeah, can I just say, doesn't it make more sense to just do the whole thing in London?
Yeah, I thought that. Yeah, I thought that.
It's better. Jim, have
better,
we not?
It's like, because it's better than the rest of the country.
Mm.
I mean, everything costs more, so you get, you know, fewer undesirables come in.
And the money circulates as well.
Exactly.
You spend more money, you get more money.
And they'll get some money elsewhere.
Yeah, well, it'll trickle down, won't it?
Trickle down, yeah.
Exactly.
Trickle up the country.
There's a powerhouse up there, isn't it?
Powerhouse.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Is anyone still listening? Is anybody still out there? We've disrespected everyone.
Sorry, you were going to ask me an actual question.
Actual question. We would need some production for the actual question.
Yeah. I suppose there is a concern that as these tournaments are being handed out, you know, Italy and Turkey in 2032, there's big chat of 2034 World Cup that it's going to go to Saudi Arabia. There's a talk of a last-minute bid between Australia and New Zealand. Yeah. But the concern is that it seems to be you're only getting one bid now for these tournaments.
Yeah.
And I suppose the concern with that is that if the bid is maybe not up to scratch, or it's perhaps a controversial bid, or there's any controversy around it, you want the plethora of choice.
You do, but bids cost a lot of money these days, don't they?
And we don't have all that voting bollocks and so on like we used to do.
But also, FIFA and UEFA and everybody sort of involved in the governance of football is making a big point of how they want tournaments to be in places that are essentially ready to go in terms of hosting them, to replenish the coffers after the pandemic. Because obviously nobody suffered more than the football associations.
That's always, it's always the case.
There's also the thing you got to remember about like the various legacies of other nations that have hosted.
The white elephant stadiums are something that they want to sort of stop doing.
Yeah, I think
in South Africa. So.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, but you're basically talking about Blatter's policy of like saying, right, we're going to go round. Obviously, with the Euros, it is just in one continent, but we're going to go round the continents, and it has to be in this one, and then it has to be in this one.
Right. Okay.
Because then taking the pressure off and say, right, like you used to, who fancies it? And of course, if there is a bid from a part of the world which has not hosted a World Cup before, as we've seen in recent years. And they're ready to go, then that would probably be more attractive. I understand the corruption and da-di-da-di-da. But I suppose the big question is, Euro 2028, Vish, who do you fancy for it?
Us?
Yeah.
What a stupid question. Harry Kane's already said we're going to win it.
The actual question answered.
the actual question answered.
Yeah, a very rare thing nowadays. So England, back-to-back Euro winners then?
Well, you think about it. He'll be in his prime. As you said, he'll be on a par with Messi and Ronaldo.
Yeah.
He'll be in London, the whole thing, so he knows London well.
And also, next summer, it's in Germany. Well, look where he is.
Yeah.
It's a home tournament for him.
It's embarrassing. Yeah. It's embarrassing for everyone else. Don't show up. You know what?
Don't show
What's
up.
The point? Don't worry about it. Just leave somewhere
it.
Else.
It is expensive. Save yourself the money and the effort and the humiliation. Just don't come. That's the spirit, isn't it? Don't come. 2028, don't bother coming.
Is that Global
You're
Britain?
You're not welcome.
Is that Global Britain gym in action?
Sadly, I think it is.
Euro 2028, get out of the way.
Coming through. We're coming through. We're coming through. Don't bother. England's coming through.
Right, well, that's that chat.
That's sorted.
Oh, dear. And should we turn our attention to some international football that's been played this week?
Yeah.
Tomorrow evening, big one, Spain hosting Scotland.
Yeah.
Come on.
Spain seem unnaturally angry about this.
They're really upset.
I don't think that Scotland are going to qualify.
Has Scotland been putting haggis in their paella or something? Is it? No, you don't do that.
You know what? That would be delicious.
Fuck, I can't eat the hell out of that.
Come on.
You're doing it again.
You don't even know
what happened to Jamie Oliver. He basically went, you know, chorizo sausage, really nice, isn't it?
So much.
And I like paella. I think that would make sense to put it, and they all kicked
very,
off there.
Very rich in fats, rich in kind of like nice.
Mm. And then people say, oh, but what if we put like bacon in a Sunday roast? And you go, it's not a bad idea, that.
Yeah. So someone, the Herald,
no idea is a bad idea.
The Herald Scotland has made not only haggis paella, patatas. Patatas bravas heart.
There you go. There you go.
And finally for now, I'm Bruce Sangria.
Yeah. You can't argue with that, Jim. You cannot
well
argue
done,
with
the Herald Scotland.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, they're going to qualify for Euro 2024 if they beat Spain. I think they're going to do it. I think there's going to be a famous...
I don't know.
Yeah, you really think they'll get a win? I think Rodri's so angry that... I was caught up in a whole Euros hosting, qualifying, like, you know, euphoric moment there. And then when you literally said, are you sure they're going to win? I have suddenly thought, probably not.
Well, I mean, if they can lose and Norway can beat Cyprus, and then they just need Spain to win or draw against Norway on the weekend.
So there
that's,
we are.
That's kind of so they could qualify this weekend.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's not like
they're there.
Do or die.
They are there.
I know,
much.
But have you heard what they're saying, Spain? They're livid.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't
know
they get so angry. I always thought it was the Bulls that were the angry ones.
Rodri, is there any country we're not going to disrespect today, do you think?
No, it's Euro. Who won the Euros?
We're just leaning into stereotypes that we all enjoy.
We own the Euros. We're going to put the Euros in the British Museum.
Next up, Wales.
That's where it belongs now.
Yeah. You didn't even win it.
Doesn't matter. So Rodri, of course, when Scotland beat Spain 2-0 back in March, Rodri accused Scotland of playing rubbish football. And then he since doubled down, as we're told to nowadays. You know,
he literally doubled back down.
Double doon. He was like, what are the Scots saying about this? He saw Limmy and he went, okay. He said, the match in Glasgow was very rare. They were clinical with their shots and we weren't, which is unusual. It was one of Spain's worst games in recent times. Do we want revenge? Yes.
So that's quite a diplomatic way of saying what he said after the game.
Yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that's doubling down.
No.
I mean, that's quite a plateau-y thing.
Yeah, you know? But he's still angry though, which was what Jim's original point was. And he'll be fired up for it. So yes, I think Spain will be looking for that revenge. I mean, I can't remember the last time Spain wanted revenge against Scotland.
No,
Jim.
It's a strange one, isn't it? But it also, it puts Scotland in a really interesting position mentally, doesn't it? Because they don't really have to win, do they? Because the odds are stacked so heavily in their favour that they can probably play with a bit of freedom that they otherwise wouldn't, which it gives them such a huge advantage.
It does, and I think that is the beauty of how their campaign has gone.
When you have to win it,
when a campaign like goes so well, you know, losing your toughest game on paper is not seen as the damning thing. You know, if you're scrambling for points, you think, oh bloody hell, we've got to go away to Spain and get something. Any team in the world would find that a tall order, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Again, you don't go into it going, it doesn't really matter, let's just put our feet up, lads. But Scotland have been so effective and so good in this qualification campaign.
they are pretty much there. I mean, only, McGinn said, you know, only our wee country could mess it up from here. But the way they're playing is, it would be madness if they did mess it up as well. And they've got Scott McTominay, Peter. He scored two goals for Manchester United at the weekend in injury time.
And it was needed.
It was needed, yeah.
It was needed at that point.
Yeah,
it was a great moment, I thought.
Yeah, he won't be able to get on the end of any Harry Maguire assists, of course.
No.
I think Harry Maguire's done enough for the Scotland team of late. But he is a second top scorer in Euro qualifying with six goals ahead of Harry Kane, Erling Haaland and Kylian Mbappe. Only Romelu Lukaku has scored more.
Nice.
And I tell you what that means is, if he goes to Saudi Arabia at some point in his career, surely, like Mitrovic, you know, top scorer at Nations League, they'll have that up, top scorer in the Euro qualifier.
Yeah. Is he a misappropriated striker? Are we learning this now?
Yeah, it could be the case. I don't know. It's a bit James McFadden, this, isn't it, Vish?
What a player.
Yeah, because McFadden was not starting that many times for Everton at the time. I think he was sort of in and out, and McTominay's been the same at Manchester United. But when they went and played for Scotland, they would get the goals. I'm saying that Scott McTominay is going to score the only goal of the game from 25 yards. A la Scotland v France in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Nicole Landreau tipping it into the roof of his net, yeah. The McTominay thing is very interesting for Scotland because there was a stage where he was playing for United in midfield and was playing and then playing for Scotland as part of a back three.
Yeah.
He's now not playing for United in midfield and he's now playing as a more advanced midfielder.
Yeah. Can do it all.
Yeah, well, he's as I've always said about him, he's so versatile.
He is versatile.
So misunderstood.
Where do you think his best position is? It clearly is in midfield.
I genuinely don't know. It is in midfield. It's not a deep midfield because his passing range isn't quite there. He was going through this weird phase of never being open. I don't know if that was a deliberate ploy in that, like, just don't give me the ball.
Yeah.
You know, like if one of us played in a proper Premier League midfield, we try and hide. It looked a little bit like that.
Yeah, okay, right.
But I think it's also down to the fact that if you look at the players Scotland have brought through and the way Clark's playing as well, it's just a bit more engaging and it's a bit more back and forth. So it suits someone like McTominay who's got legs and likes to put himself about. You know, we've got big John McGinn there. Ryan Jack's not playing because he's injured. Kieran Tierney's injured as well. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple of people. I didn't realise as well, this, you know, related to Pete, but they're trying to twist Elliot Anderson's arm.
Oh. Well, they've been doing this for a while, but Elliot Anderson went up to train with them, I think.
Yeah.
And I think he then, was he umming and ahhing or he left the camp or something and basically Steve Clark turned around and went, well, if you're not interested, then see you later, pal. Well, we want people who are completely committed.
Well, so Clark went on the record, I think in a press conference recently and said, look, he's got a big decision to make.
Yeah.
Like, we would obviously pick him, but he's got a decision to make. So
they're
putting in his court. But it was a factor coming into this. I mean, you know, it's you only really know, as with Che Adams, like qualify for it and then say he was interested.
Yeah, you know? I know.
Harvey Barnes, another one who's eligible.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a coup, wouldn't it, if Scotland could get him?
Is it because Newcastle's closer to the border?
Could be.
Right. We know so much about domestic geographical politics, don't we? We're so across it.
I do.
Yeah.
You Londoners, though. But anyway, Scotland, so will they beat Spain? Will it even matter? We don't know. Tonight, though, Peter, Wales versus Gibraltar.
Oh, I never think of anger, Rodri. Gibraltar, thoughts?
Hey, they should get a game for Euro 2028. That would annoy them. Do you think The Rock can beat Wales, Jim?
I don't think The Rock can beat Wales, no.
Okay.
It's just a really interesting one to book in, isn't it?
It is.
They were annoyed recently at having to play a friendly, weren't they? Because there's that strange situation where Wales were, yeah. When there's a set of qualifiers, if you, for some reason, only have one due to a quirk of the calendar, you have to play a friendly on one of the other
You
dates.
Have to play
and
Belgium.
They were really angry about it. It's like they've booked a sarcastic one in response to that. It's like, all right, we'll play fucking Gibraltar then.
you don't have to. Yeah, no, it's fine.
We're playing soccer raid. All right?
Do they play? They play on a side who they just think, yeah, fine. Like they'll be able to just wave them through passport control easy.
Where are you playing it? A League Two ground?
Yeah. Rob Page is like, give me a game where I don't have to turn up to. That's basically it. Yeah, they're playing at Wrexham's racecourse ground. It's only the second international game to be held there in 15 years.
Mm.
It was quite a popular spot, wasn't it, Wrexham's ground? Am I right in saying for many decades ago for Wales games? But anyway. But Rob Page is expected to bring in Charlie Savage to make his first start for Wales.
Robbie Savage has got a call-up as well for this one, I believe.
Is that right?
That'd be nice.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. 50 Cent has made his foray finally into Welsh football, sponsoring a Welsh under-14s football team. who will provide some of the Wales team for that game. No, they're not going to.
He's a very adult rapper, isn't he?
Yeah,
you don't want under 14s.
Yeah, it's become a really strange kind of badge of honour amongst entrepreneurial types, isn't it?
Right,
to have some sort of Welsh football involvement, it would seem.
Well, yeah, I mean, because of, you know, because of what's happened with Wrexham.
Yeah.
You know, people just see it as like, oh, that's cool. I'll just have that.
Do that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, so what is the sponsorship? Just buying a couple of kits?
G Unit, isn't it? I remember the clothing brand from my youth, because off in the distance, people wearing that was like, does that say? Oh no, okay.
So is it, so are the clothes G Unit clothes then? Or are they just
no, they're
G Unit sneakers.
It's a kit sponsor. They're not like they're
right. Okay, sorry, I thought that he may have had a clothing line that he.
Ever
that
since he
made.
Sponsored them, my goodness. All right,
it's just a vest.
It's just a vest and a gun. Vest and a gun and a big. A big pair of trousers.
Also, like, yeah, as you say, he's
50 cents. Big pair of trousers.
He's a very tight tank top as well. Tight white tank tops. Uh-huh. But yeah, as Jim says, like, he's quite an adult rapper. Yeah. One of those kids are like listening to Candy Shop. It's not strictly about a candy shop.
No, absolutely right. He is a disgrace. All right, let's take a quick break.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battled it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Chaps.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody.
That was old what McGinn, was wasn't it?
Yeah.
Johnny nice. McGinn.
Chaps.
Right, so we're going to start with an email from Paul Hamley, who said, this question is very much for Marcus C. Speller to enjoy. Well, I'll decide, Paul. Now that Gareth's beautiful boys are in charge of La Liga and Bundesliga, who should we send to Italy and France to sort out their leagues? So we are going to disrespect everybody,
yeah,
Jim.
Really
I
are.
Like it.
Mr. Blobby.
Yes.
Bergerac.
Well, Bergerac's in the Channel Islands. Leave
okay.
him there.
Well, he's accessible to Europe then, isn't he?
We need someone just in that middle bit.
Okay, fine.
Who would you say? I mean, we tried to send Joey Barton and then Joe Cole to differing...
That's true.
Well, we've got Andy Carroll in France, so that should sort itself.
But not in Ligue 1. Maybe next season.
Yeah, but if you know he's coming, you sort yourself out, don't you?
True enough. I think most people in France are unaware of Andy Carroll being in their country. So yes, who should we send? I mean, Italy. They well, Tomori, I would say.
He's out there representing.
You know, you could say that. Ruben Loftus-Cheek's gone out there. But, I mean, I suppose maybe more Gareth Southgate stalwarts. The land of great defending. Get Harry Maguire over there to show him how it's done.
Yeah.
You know? How about that?
The Leaning Tower of Maguire.
Oh, Peter.
Heading balls away from his defence.
Right. And what about France, Jim? Who would you send to France?
Well, I think we've already got Andy Carroll there, as you say. Mm-hmm. And I think you're unwise to disregard that so quickly. Who would we send to France?
Clarkson.
Yeah,
there you are.
There we are.
Jeremy Clarkson.
Jeremy Clarkson.
I was trying to think, essentially, who is the most Brexit footballer. But they're all managers, aren't they?
Get Big Sam
Warnock.
Out there, actually.
Warnock. Yeah. Come on, he's out of a job, isn't he? Mm.
There you are, you see. All makes sense, everybody. Right, back on the domestic front. Birmingham City have sacked John Eustace. This was a slight surprise for some Birmingham fans. I think there's a bit of a mixed reaction, but some were unhappy with this, certainly, because he saved them from relegation last year. They're currently in the playoff spots. They had a decent win against West Brom on the weekend, but it wasn't enough. And the Birmingham owners said that Eustace's sort of vision and wants, if you like, for the club don't align with theirs. But this does coincide...
the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you want to win the league? We want to go up through the play. We want a day out of Wembley. But this coincides with Wayne Rooney leaving his post in the States, of course. And Rooney is now being heavily linked to the job. He's set to earn three times more than Eustace, according to reports. Birmingham co-owner Tom Brady reportedly likes the idea of a famous football figure like Rooney joining his new project.
This whole co-owner thing, is like he's got a very small stake, hasn't he, which allows essentially people to claim he's the essentially the owner.
Yeah,
he's not really.
Yeah, so I mean that could just be paid.
They basically have his number in their phone. That, look, he's a mate.
Yeah,
we chat all the time.
Exactly.
Look at his funny WhatsApp photo.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? I mean, Rooney back in England managing Birmingham City. Obviously, people were impressed with what he did at Derby in very difficult circumstances.
Yeah but it's. I mean, we should really start from the Birmingham City John Eustace side of it.
Okay.
Where you said that. You know, some people were upset about it. I think there was a blanket-wide surprise about it.
Yeah.
And then I think we, you know, with the, what they called the Shelby Group, aren't they? This kind of the holding company. And we, you know, we talked about this before on the show when this takeover actually happened, and someone, a Birmingham City fan, got in touch and said, actually, you know, the group is a bit more Birmingham aligned, mm-hmm. and like it might seem funny right. because mm-hmm. of Peaky Blinders, but that's
it is funny.
It's you know, it's something that locally that has been taken to, and it is a sincere thing.
Yeah,
this is quite an insincere moment, I'd say, in terms of getting rid of a guy who, regardless of what he did last year, mm-hmm. has got them in a pretty sound position now in sixth, considering where a lot of bigger teams in the Championship are at this point of the season. And obviously we know it's a league of great flux and whatever. But it does strike me as a bit like you would make the change now mm-hmm. because this is a solid position, so someone could at least consolidate this or take it a bit further on. And also you just want a name.
Yeah.
Because ultimately this
That's
is what it comes
like,
for. Yeah.
Almost a stunt casting. Now,
yeah.
It's not like Rooney doesn't have any pedigree as a manager, but you wonder why.
It's not great pedigree though, is it?
No, but
he doesn't have a
wonder
huge...
why he's coming in now at all. Especially on three times the salary. It all feels a bit like laying the groundwork for a documentary, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's
exactly
the only reason why people
exactly
do this sort of thing. They
they
found out that Rooney was coming because his son Kai started following a load of Birmingham footballers on Instagram.
People always give themselves away,
people
don't
should
they?
Be on leashes. I truly believe that. Just leave
surely
children
like seven or
on the internet
steps
alone.
Before those two things.
Just turn the internet off. Turn the internet off.
Why people are really genuinely, and I say this as someone who's quite active on Instagram, people are dull as shit on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Footballers especially. Why do you need to follow them on Instagram?
Well, see what's going on.
See what's going on.
Exactly.
I'm not gonna fucking actually go there.
Yeah.
Are there any footballers on Instagram that actually exhibit any kind of humour? Because I'm always surprised at like the rest of John Cena is regarded as being very dull, very sort of safe hand kind of corporate businessman. But him on like Instagram, he's a bit of a shitposter, which I quite appreciate. He loves shitposting.
Emerson Royale's really good.
Yes.
We know.
Okay.
He posts all kinds of interesting stuff. Jose Mourinho is brilliant as well.
Yeah. Mourinho's good.
But you kind of get a sense that they're done by committee. And
exactly.
Sort of
like, exactly.
Also good on Instagram and good on Twitter, Martin Darun.
Atalanta.
Yeah. Very funny.
All right.
Oh, good one there.
Genuinely very funny.
Now, speaking of interesting owners at football clubs, an Australian businessman who He still is on a European gap year, isn't he? Mm. This chap who's decided to invest in Southend United. It saved the club, really. There's a consortium there. It was a fascinating story. I think he was in Santiago de Compostela, having just done the Camino out in northern Spain. And he saw what was happening with Southend United, and being a big football fan, he went, well, this can't happen. This is a club with, you know, enormous history. He's been around for years. And so Justin Rees, who made his money in corporate IT, got himself together with a 5-person consortium, and boom, there they are at Southend. And Southend, I think they won on the weekend, and was it on a Friday night they won or something? And suddenly the whole situation's been turned round.
If you want a documentary, Southend Airport can accommodate many private jets.
Oh, yes, yes. I did.
And they fly over my house every single morning.
I tell you what, do we need more Aussies in football? Because on the shores...
They're just helping it.
Well, so far.
Yeah. Two Aussies that have come and come to these shores to help out tactically financially.
I mean, to be fair, Southend United's protest was throwing a lot of rats onto the pitch, or waving a lot of rats last
night. Isn't that real
not
rats?
No.
Rubber rats. Where do you get rubber rats at such scale?
Yeah.
And they're all identical models. I couldn't figure it out.
It's quite impressive.
Who got all the rubber rats?
I'm still picturing people waving live rats.
Yeah.
Surely... Well. Oh, I don't want to start saying what people should say.
What if one of the rats, one of the rats got on one of the players' heads, and like Ratatouille was really good at football?
Yes!
And then they got to the top flight. They got to the Premier League.
Got to the top flight because of Ratatouille, man, yeah. The footballer. Yeah.
Interesting.
They're like, what's that under your hat? Leave it. Goal!
Now, gentlemen, let us talk about the new 4-part documentary, Beckham.
Beckham.
Which was released last week on Netflix. Have you seen it?
I watched every last episode, and I think my partner was a little more part than I was about how football-y it was. It ticked a lot of boxes football-y wise.
It is a strange one, isn't it? What he's done with the documentary, because, like, you know, it's a documentary about himself. So when people say it's a PR exercise, well, inevitably,
yeah,
that's kind of going to.
It's called Beckham.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So don't be too surprised. What's his name? Fisher Stevens, who's
played a brown man a while ago
in Short Circuit.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is that who Fisher? Is that who he's talking all the time?
Yeah.
Oh, right. I mean, okay. Yes.
Not doing the accent, Pete. That's why you don't recognize him.
Yeah, he's doing his American accent rather than
astonishing bit of
But he some of the comments he makes. I would say are very, very American.
Yeah.
Now, I like America and I like American things. But when you're talking to David Beckham and
Sir Alex Ferguson or
Diego Simeone or all these sort of characters. Or
Johnny Five.
Yeah, no, he used a very different accent for that, we should say.
Okay.
It is quite strange. But so the whole PR thing, obviously that's gonna be close, blah, 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 blah. But it's funny because I was thinking, who is this? Because at times I think, is this more for an American audience? And then you think, oh, but there is a lot of football and there's a lot of his former teammates, you know, Neville and Keane. And you think, and who is it for? And he literally says in the documentary, this is for my family. So they have like a record of my career.
Don't put it on Netflix then.
Well, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, obviously it is a puff piece and we judge it on those terms. I think it's fair to say.
But look at his
little
face.
There are, you know, a famous accusation of philandering that they don't really go into very well.
Do we really want, for want of a better phrase, a blow-by-blow account of that sort of thing?
No, but I'm just saying that it is stark that's one of the big stories and the big aspect of his life that was, you know, really problematic for that family.
Yeah.
And, you know, understandably, you don't want to give oxygen to it, but there is a certain thing of going, there's no denials and there's no... I think it was stark that was brushed over so quickly when... The distance between a wife and a husband was so much of that documentary, which I think was very interesting.
Yeah. Part of me, when I finished, I thought, they didn't reveal that much. Then, but at times I thought, oh, I didn't know that it was... I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. I mean, there was plenty of 90s nostalgia in this, so it's always going to be win me over somewhat.
I think there is too much football, as Pete's partner said.
There is quite a lot of football. I mean, I thought the episode, they vilified Glenn Hoddle a lot.
Yeah.
To drill down to certain bits in the documentary, that there was a lot of chat around the sending off, of course, against Argentina in the 98 World Cup, because that was such a huge thing in his career, and has probably... shaped him a bit, Mark, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, it's an absolutely essential part of Brian Beckham because the redemption arc absolutely cemented him as not just a star, but a superstar.
And
someone
I think
who's
to
like,
come back
who's,
from that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think,
immediately
the,
interesting.
The treatment that he got, and the treatment that England players got over the years, why would you ever come back?
Yep.
Why would you ever want to captain England? Why would you ever want to play again for that when you're treated that poorly for, you know, your, I mean, how old is he? 22? Like, yeah, he's
23,
kicking out,
I think. 23, right? He's early 20s at the time. I mean, yeah, I think that it goes into a very, very ugly sort of bit of national psyche. I would say it was more, I would hope and think it was more prevalent back then, because I don't think a player would get anywhere near that now. Although people are talking about Harry Maguire, and Beckham recently phoned Harry Maguire and chatted to him, which Maguire appreciated. But I think the two are very different.
Very different. Mm.
And I think the abuse and the vile sort of almost like
the effigies of him.
Oh, that absolute and stuff. Big slug bloke.
Yeah,
who's like hung an effigy outside his pub and couldn't understand why the police made him take it down.
Yeah, yeah,
it's not mine. I borrowed it.
Ridiculous, ain't it?
Yeah. I sort of forgot the level of abuse, but of course, when I was, you know, witnessing that, I was much younger. You know, you digest stuff differently then.
Also,
as a teenager,
we were hanging out in.
Don't say hanging out.
No, but we were hanging out in different places, weren't we? Whereas like now we'd see it because we'd be privy to it in a pub or something like that. But at the time, I think it happens. Right. We see it on the news.
Yeah.
You don't. We like. You know, I didn't really see too many front pages when I was, you know, walking around being driven to school.
Of course.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But the thing.
Did your driver not read them too?
Always the Financial Times. but the thing that you've noticed. You know, where we are now with Maguire is like the way people join in to join in without actually having a strong opinion about the bloke, which is what was happening back then.
Oh, massively. Yeah, it was just like sort of like common knowledge, wasn't it, that Beckham was a snake and he was this and that he'd cost us the World Cup and
all that,
et cetera, the amount of leaps that you had to do to think that he cost us a chance of winning that World Cup are ridiculous.
Lost on pens.
Yeah,
no. Score your fucking pens, dickhead.
Yeah, and the Lionesses showed you how you do that, by the way, when James was sent off. But one of the things was around that, Jim, about him being chucked under the bus and so on, by Glenn Hoddle, the England manager. Glenn Hoddle, I find interesting. I thought it was a shame that Hoddle was not on the documentary to talk about it.
Do you want to flesh it out a bit just for, because...
Glenn Hoddle, England manager.
Yeah, I didn't realise the scale of it until I watched the documentary.
So Glenn Hoddle's England manager. Glenn Hoddle at the time, you know, obviously was quite young as an England manager then, very young. And there was always chat that Hoddle still thought he was the man in training when they played. Hoddle was a great player. He felt that he was always slightly underappreciated, which he probably was, although I wasn't watching football at that time, or was some of it wasn't even, you know, barely sentient. But that was the feeling, that he was this flashier player, obviously went off to play abroad and so on and did good things there. Blah, 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 blah. He eventually ends up England manager, of course. A lot of people will know this. And he...
Beckham, bit of an ego. He's got a bit of an ego.
Had, I would say. And that's what I find a shame, that he wasn't on the documentary, because Glenn Hoddle... is, I would argue passionately, is a changed man. You know, you think about, you know, Jules obviously works with him. We know Jules and talks about, you know, he's a lovely fella and everybody's. I met him 10 years after this in 2008 when I was a runner at Sky Sports, and he was the only one that would look you in the eye and talk to you and actually talk to you on your level. And people might say, well, obviously he's going to do that. Well, actually, in that environment, when you have Richard Keys and all these dinosaurs around and some other ex-footballers, they didn't even acknowledge you. So I thought it was really interesting that actually Hoddle came across as much more personable and friendly. And I think that after this whole episode, and of course he would then be sacked. I think he was I'm pretty sure he was sacked, wasn't he, as England manager? Yeah. It wasn't a mutual thing. It was a sacking. I think Hoddle massively changed, because he was accused of being arrogant and so on. And in training, you know, Beckham said in his book, it got to the point where some of the players, he would join in the sessions, and some of them would see how hard they could go in on him, because he would sometimes say, you know, which is crazy, you know, but he wouldn't do that with Roy Hodgson. But some
you'd
people
get decked, as we learned.
Yeah, some people would say that the reports were that Beckham would try and do something, he would go, no, David, you do it like this in front of everybody, because I think Hoddle probably saw a bit of himself in Beckham.
Beckham idolised him.
And so you had all that kind of stuff, but I think Hoddle now is a very changed character and has been for many years.
Well, it sounds like Marcus is very much team Hoddle on this particular
episode. Well, I wasn't back then. I thought Hoddle handled it very, very poorly,
and he did, and Beckham was talking about back then.
That's he threw him under the bus, and he was, and Victoria Beckham makes a very good point, he was a man David Beckham was 22.
Yeah.
He's a child. And he had to deal with the fallout. I mean, like,
Shame that Tony Adams didn't get a mention, because he said, Beckham said around that time, Adams was the only one who put his arm around him. And he said, Tony Adams was brilliant with me.
Mm.
When he walked into the dressing room, or everybody walked in because he was in there already, they were gutted. And he said, I said to Alan Shearer, I'm so sorry, Alan. And he said he didn't even look at him. You know, like, the players were really, really pissed off. But Tony Adams was the one. But I understand in a documentary, I can't cover every blade of grass. You know, kind of thing.
I think what was really stark for me, like, I'm 42. You are of an age where you're thinking about what kind of father you might become or the one you would be. And I think Beckham's relationships with Sir Alex Ferguson and his father, I'm not a high-functioning, successful man. But obviously, all of these men are.
Well, if you're
and
not, what makes and if that? You,
the I know rest exactly. I know exactly. But I just sort of think that, like,
I mean exactly
is like watching this sort of Beckham sausage being made through the lens of his relationship with Sir Alex Ferguson and his dad. Are successful male father son relationships quite fucking toxic? Like. It was all
high
a bit
pressure and like
fucking shit,
and,
wasn't it? It was all just, it wasn't even reward based. It was just like ignoring anything good you do and slating you when you do something bad. And I was just a bit like, do we really need to be fucking doing this?
Well, the reward being not slated.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
It was just all a bit
It's
difficult.
An old-fashioned approach, certainly.
Yeah. It is, yeah. But like, do you look at Alex Ferguson there and sort of go, oh, brilliant? Or do you look at David Beckham's dad and go, brilliant,
well,
I'm glad that happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think to...
And when he loses these father figures
Ferguson
in football,
and Beckham's...
he's just a bit listless and he's a bit kind of lost by his own admission.
Yeah.
I think it's why you get... So one of the saddest bits in the documentary for me, and it was sad at the time, and I properly welled up when I watched it again, is when he walked off the field at PSG.
Yeah.
When he retires.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he talks about how he can't breathe for the 5 minutes before, because he's been told he's going to be taken off 10 minutes
right.
before.
Yeah.
And 5 minutes before the point where he's about to be substituted, he is basically hyperventilating because he's so upset. And he walks off, and he was, what, 37, I think, at the time?
Late 30s. Yeah,
he's a child.
Yeah.
He walks off a blubbering child, and it like broke my heart to see him like that. Because also, you remember as well that football requires a lot of sacrifice. It requires basically, essentially a very difficult relationship with the people around you, including your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And despite all that he's achieved and all the places he's been, all the things he's seen, he is broken by the fact that he can never do that again.
That's right.
And I appreciate that it's because of the sacrifice and the love as well. But I think that really hit home that, like, even he's like that.
Yeah.
Even the guy who's done everything is like that.
Well, when
that's
you said
really
there was...
quite harrowing in a way.
When you said
I do that when I get subbed at 11s.
But there's a sense, isn't there?
David
Beckham had a lot of injuries and a lot of different types of injuries as well. And the fact that
he had a few. I think there are other players.
You know,
I don't think his career would be defined
like that.
Snapped
Achilles and things like that.
Yeah, but I don't think towards the end of his career, you know, it's not the same as, say, I don't know, you know, Alan Shearer or somebody.
And
like
I didn't say it was. But leading into my point, which is that the idea that your body now can't handle something that your brain is still sharp enough to do and that your passion is still there for must be so, so difficult. There's simply no escaping it because it is physically you. And could you imagine the feeling, the emotions of that as you are kind of leaving the pitch in that final motion?
Yeah, and
moment.
I think it was, you said there was too much football in it. From one point of view, I understand. But actually, I loved, in particular, the bit with Manchester United, just everybody reminding themselves or being reminded what a player he was.
I think that's crucial because there's a narrative around David Beckham from people that aren't necessarily that into football where they're like, oh, well, he wasn't actually that good, was he? He was a bit of a pop star footballer.
Yeah.
And I think it's good that the documentary makes the space to refute that.
Yeah, I think you've got to get it right. I think, you know, when he goes to Real Madrid and he's a Galactico in that team, you know, Beckham didn't reach the heights of Zidane. I would probably say Figo, you know, was probably that touch better as well. You know, before Messi and Ronaldo, you had Zidane, Figo, Ronaldo, Fenomeno, and a few other players. Kaká, a teammate. Would he have played with Kaká at Milan? Possibly. I'm not sure. Maybe gone by then. But you had that bracket of players that had all sort of won the world's best player in that. And Beckham got close. I don't think Beckham is in that bracket. So I don't want to over-egg this and suddenly go, oh, he's, you know, an all-time great. He was a very, 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 very good footballer. He is in that bracket where Lampard and Gerrard and Scholes, perhaps. Maybe Scholes, people might a notch higher.
Did that not give that Galacticos era of Real Madrid, when they go into it there, did that not give you a real it certainly gave me a real good insight into what being a top level footballer, like, and I mean like upper echelons top level footballer was like.
Yeah.
Because now it's like, it seems quite individualistic, yeah?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
They were clearly all in it together.
Yeah.
So like, I know, you know, you talked about, he's definitely not a Ronaldo's level, definitely not a Zidane's level, as you said, Figo a bit higher.
Mm.
But they all kind of like identified with each other.
Well, yeah. I think they knew.
Like going out for a beer.
Yeah. Even,
like the other thing I love, like an offshoot of this, I always had in my head that the rivalry with him and Figo was quite pronounced.
No.
No, not at all.
No.
Like, the way Figo talks about him on there, and obviously Figo says, you know, fuck it, I'm not giving this up for him.
But Figo was almost like a he often comes across as like an elder statesman of the game sometimes.
Yeah. It was an elder fucking Dan. Look at his chin. His chin's got even more pronounced as he's gotten older.
I forgot how elfish he looked as a player.
A phenomenal player he was.
Speaking of elvish, like the ex-Manchester United manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer popping in every now and again like a wise little wood elf.
Was nice.
Hello, you know, everyone.
That's done
I'm
really
charming.
Well.
Uh-huh.
The documentary makers have done that really well, because the first thing Gary Neville says is, I never really like nightclubs, which is the perfect first thing to him to say. And the first time you see Roy Keane, he's dunking a biscuit into some tea, and that seems incongruous.
Yeah.
It's really, really well made in quite subtle ways.
There's a lot of like lovely Easter eggs for the football fan. But I mean, this documentary, unfortunately, will lead to another generation of men thinking that they should shave their fucking heads.
Mm.
I did it when Beckham did it.
Did you?
I had it for 10 years. Doesn't work. Yeah. Don't do it.
He's a bit like David Bowie, isn't he? There's lots of different eras of Beckham.
Yes.
And his looks.
And he's just beautiful. Has anyone ever taken a bad picture of David Beckham? I'd like to find one.
His son, maybe?
Yes.
I just a few points of...
Could I just quickly say on Neville... Gary Neville, obviously the first time you see him in the documentary, he gets pelters from someone random in the street.
Yeah, I know.
Like, yeah, we'll keep that in.
The man cannot win. Yeah. Someone has a go at his scarf.
But also, I have to say, what a good friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My girlfriend and I both thought that while watching it. We both made the same point at the same time. It comes across so, so clearly, doesn't it, that this is a really loyal guy.
Yeah. and like when he talks about it and gets emotional in real time, and then you sometimes, you know, occasionally they flash back to Gary Neville's press conferences as a player where he's asked about Beckham and he answers them so well.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Like, genuinely, what a good friend he is.
Gentlemen, there, let us move on from David Beckham, who is, of course, a retired footballer, to another retired footballer, Eden Hazard, retired from football at the age of 32.
We're saying goodbye to everyone, aren't we?
We are.
R.I.P. Booty Man.
Yeah. He's been a free agent since leaving Real Madrid in the summer. He has only played, I think, 70 appearances for Real Madrid in that time.
He's kind of came back from injury at really unfortunate times where Real Madrid had been quite good.
But he's had terrible
got a lot
injuries.
Of competition for his players.
He was accused of being a little bit out of shape when he turned up. I don't know. It's a bit of a shame that it didn't quite happen for him at Real Madrid. There was injuries, but there were accusations about his attitude and so on and so forth.
Which I'm broadly okay with.
I like it.
And I think I kind of love that.
This shouldn't define his legacy. No, I mean, when you say you're okay with it, yes, for the bants and the lols. But I mean, if you have spent, you know, in a deal of up to 150 million on someone, and they're not really putting it in, you can understand.
But you know, but is that? But you know what Real Madrid are like. They do this all the time. They did it with Gareth Bale. They did it with everybody. Like, they do it with everyone.
Yeah, but I would question
who doesn't live and breathe football. I think that's the main thing. I think we're uncomfortable as football fans with players who don't necessarily think that, you know, your life starts and ends with football. And you know, it's proven. Like, I think it's not helped by the fact he looks a bit like Tom Hanks's shitty son Chet.
Yeah.
And also he clearly there would have been like loads of cash on the table to go to Saudi Arabia. And he's just went, nah, I'm all right, I'm done. And I love that about him. And he was, for me, he was always that kind of, that Chelsea player where it made me feel a bit, him and Juan Mata and Petr Cech, like, I like them, but they're Chelsea.
Yeah.
Like, I feel done.
What you got against Chelsea?
Need to go to confession, father. man needs to confess.
Hazard,
I have coveted a Chelsea player.
I think Hazard, when he played at Chelsea in the Premier League, it was like, you know, we had one of the stars of the game.
The very best.
I don't know if this is just me, but I kind of forget him when I think of the recent greats in the Premier League.
Really?
And when I'm quickly reminded, then I'm like, oh my goodness, it's my shame that I forget him. I'm not saying that he was forgettable. He was magnificent at Chelsea.
No, I'm just surprised by that because there are so many highlight reel moments. Also, just his like his touch, which obviously is, you know, the building block of everything that he did, really. But his first touch was always immaculate. Yeah. And like, you know, Pete mentioned his ass at the start, and Yahya Toure, there's a great video of Yahya Toure and Declan Rice talking about how his ass was like a, you know,
special
part
weapon.
Of his suit. Yeah, it was a special weapon. It helped him get around people. But also, you know, I'm thinking about the goal against Arsenal at Stamford Bridge and various other things where he would just do, and also the goal in that one game that season, he turned it on against Spurs for Leicester City to win the league. But he was actually, those moments were of greater frequency, throughout a season. He was probably, if you're going to really and truly build like the best technical 11 to have played in the Premier League, I think he's got to be in with a shout.
Oh, really. Definitely. I think that's it. I think he's, I mean, what a dribbler as well.
Yeah, he had so much power to his game.
Yeah.
Really dominant for a forward player as well. Like, he had the sort of, like, had the kind of, the power you might associate with a more defensively minded player, which made him such a handful to deal with.
He didn't care.
He could
for
go
the
off against defenders and just. Wasn't a mismatch.
Yeah, he didn't care for the defensive side of the game too much, but, you know, you could understand why.
Because it was all forward facing.
Yeah. I mean, he was, yeah, he won everything other than the Champions League, really, at Chelsea. He would get a Champions League winner's medal at Real Madrid, but I mean, he didn't contribute too much to their campaign. So, yeah, I think that in this country, we have such a body of work for him that's how he'll be remembered. Mm. I think it's a shame, perhaps in the wider context, certainly in Spain, you know, they didn't see much of the Eden Hazard that we saw. But he is one of the best players that has played in the top flight in England in recent years. Like, make no mistake about that. Mm. And, you know, that is some accolade. And to be crowned player of the season as well. I know this sounds a bit of a stupid thing to say, but there are many, many great players who have played in the Premier League, who have had great longevity in the Premier League, who never won that accolade. To be crowned out of everybody, and whatever individual awards people can scorn and scoff at them, for someone to say, no, you've been the best this season is quite something. So, yeah, even though he's not been really in the football world for a little while, I think he will be missed. So there we are. And that's the note we're going to finish on today, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Patreon subscribers, don't go anywhere. Keep listening for Ramble Uncut. If you're not signed up yet, get over to Patreon by hitting the link in the show notes. And big news, everybody. You can now access and download all of our ad-free shows and bonus Patreon content on Spotify. So there is absolutely no excuse not to sign up. And of course, follow us on Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram at Football Ramble. Don't forget to subscribe on your podcast app. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Petey.
Ta-ta.
Thank you, Vichy.
Thank you.
And thank you, David Beckham. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.